Grammar Girl here. I get a lot of questions about things that are too short to make up a whole podcast, so today I'm going to answer a few of those short questions. This week I also have a free offer from the Wall Street Journal, which is cool because not only do I love reading the journal, but it was also the first publication to run a story about the podcast, so I kind of feel as if they discovered me. The deal is if you sign up for the print or online version of the journal using the link at our website, you can get up to 8 weeks free. Thanks, Wall Street Journal. So here's our first listener question.
Hi, Grammar Girl. D-Chap here. Here's a new one, a Marine with a grammar question. So I was thinking about the words dreamed and dreamt. I've heard it used both ways, and I've seen it written both ways, but it doesn't make a lot of sense to me about what the proper usage would be if there is one, because you don't say cremped when you're trying to say creamed, or the same thing with gleamed and glemped. You never hear those. So I was wondering what the proper usage was for dreamed as opposed to dreamt, D-R-E-A-M-T. Have a good day.
Hey, D-Chap. You're actually not the first Marine to submit a grammar question. I've heard from a few Marines, including some guys who wrote in from Iraq. The reason you're confused is that dreamed and dreamt are both allowable past tense forms of the verb dream. Dreamed is more common in American English, and dreamt is more common in British English. The same holds true for most other words that have these two forms. For example, learned and spilled are more common in American English, whereas learnt and spilt are more common in British English. Most of the time you add ed to a verb to put it in the past tense. Jump becomes jumped, for example. So verbs taking an ed are called regular verbs. The less common past tense forms that end with a t, such as dreamt, are called irregular verbs. Okay, here's another question.
Hi, Grammar Girl. I am a college student, and I recently questioned if octopus, or, well, octopi is the correct way to say the plural form of octopus, and I got different answers from two different professors, and I know it has something to do with the derivatives and if it's Latin or Greek, so I was just wondering if you could address the plural forms of octopus or pegasus and any other words you can think of. All right, thanks. Bye.
You're right that foreign words sometimes keep their foreign plural, especially when they aren't commonly used words. Fungus comes from Latin, and the proper plural is fungi, for example. But most words that came into English through Latin or Greek take the standard es to make them plural. The proper English plurals are octopuses, hippopotamuses, pegasuses, cactuses, and so on. There are varying forms of acceptance for forms like octopi, hippopotami, and cacti. For example, cacti is more common among people who work with plants, but it's usually safest to go with the ES for plurals. Here's another one.
All right, Grammar Girl. This is Brian from Seattle, and I have a question about the word nauseous. I always thought that nauseous meant that you were causing nausea. So when someone says, I'm feeling nauseous, they're causing me to throw up on them. But everyone says it. Everyone says I'm feeling nauseous, and I always thought it was wrong, but movie stars say it and books say it, and maybe I've been wrong this entire time. I thought, if I'm feeling sick, I'm nauseated. And that big pile of trash on the floor is nauseous, meaning it's causing me to throw up. Anyway, I think you understand my question. I'd appreciate an answer. Thanks. Bye.
Brian's right, and this is a good reminder that I should get a flu shot, too, so thanks. It's common to hear people say they're nauseous when their stomach is upset. But language sticklers hold that nauseous means to induce nausea, whereas nauseated means you feel sick. So when you're describing how sick you feel, you should say you're nauseated. When you're describing something that makes you sick, you should call it nauseous. At least that's how you should do it if you want to be extremely proper. Most usage guides note that the improper use is far more common than the proper use, which is always a bad sign for a rule. And the Merriam-Webster Dictionary of English Usage even goes so far as to say there's no basis for the rule. So it's likely that the confusion will continue for a while, and eventually nobody will object when you say you feel nauseous when you're sick. Whether that will happen in 20 years or 200 years, I don't know. Here's one more.
Hi, Grammar Girl. This is Shan in Phoenix, Arizona. I was hoping you could set the record straight about the use of try and versus try to. For example, I'm going to try and give Grammar Girl a call versus I'm going to try to give Grammar Girl a call. My inclination is that try to is the only correct construction. However, I increasingly hear people say try and. Could you please set this straight? I'm dying to have an authority hold forth on this. Thank you. Bye.
Hi, Shannon. I got really frustrated while researching this topic because none of my books seemed willing to take a stand. They all said try and is an acceptable informal idiom that means try to. They say to avoid try and in formal writing, but not to get too worked up about it otherwise. But none of them address what bothers me about the phrase try and, which is that if you use and, as in your example sentence, I'm going to try and call Grammar Girl, you're separating trying and calling. You're describing two things, trying and calling. When you use try to, as in I'm going to try to call Grammar Girl, you're using the preposition to link the trying to the calling. I may have to put this on my list of pet peeves, and as I've said before, people almost always form pet peeves about things that are style issues or where the rules aren't clear. There was a really funny grammar-related clip on YouTube that I want to tell you about that was brought to my attention by a listener named Scott. Last week on the TV show The Office, the characters got into a big fight about whether to use the word whoever or whomever. I thought about doing a tie-in episode, but I covered who versus whom 6 months ago, so it seemed too soon to do it again. But you should really see this clip. I put a link on the Grammar Girl website. For all you aspiring novelists out there, November is National Novel Writing Month, and you might want to check out a website called NaNoWriMo, which holds a novel writing contest for the whole month. It looks like much more than a contest, though. There's a lot of support and encouragement for getting your novel written. It's at nanowrimo.org, and I'll put a link on the Grammar Girl website, too. Finally, don't forget to visit the Grammar Girl website to get those free weeks of the Wall Street Journal's print or online edition. You would have heard about Grammar Girl there first, so who knows what other great things you'll discover. You can find a transcript of this podcast, my contact information, a link to the Facebook quiz to go with this episode, the new Behind the Grammar podcast, and all the other great Quick and Dirty Tips podcasts at quickanddirtytips.com. This week, Mr. Manners is celebrating his first anniversary as a podcaster with an episode about how to make a toast.